Welcome to episode number 2 of International Voices. My name is John Hildebrand. I'm the host of this podcast. And that musical preview should be a little hint as to our guest that's with us here in the studio today. Again, this podcast is a show that's intent on sharing the stories of our international students here in the United States and here on our campus at Southern Utah University. I am here with one of our fantastic students from Saudi Arabia, Mr. Ahmed Al-Muhaidili. Did I do okay?
Yeah.
More affectionately known, according to his hairstyle, probably the most distinct hairstyle on campus. Afro?
Yeah.
Good to have you here, man.
Thank you. Well, thank you for having me today.
Absolutely. Although, I wouldn't really say that your hairstyle is an afro right now. It's kind of, you kind of let it go. It's a little bit longer now.
Yeah. So it's technically not afro anymore.
Do you ever feel like you're constricted by your nickname? Like you won't be able to cut your hair?
Well, that's why I'm holding it until now. That's why I did not cut it.
So you're going to keep it?
Until I graduate.
Okay.
Yeah.
There you go. That's so sometimes your nickname can like dictate your hairstyle,
well, yeah.
Right?
People like just call me Afro instead of my real name. I think it's like easier for them because my name is kind of hard for them.
Sure. Well, I know that everyone around the office refers to you as Afro.
Yeah.
So sometimes when I have to actually like look up some information for you and I have to remember your legal name, I can't remember what it is. I type Afro into the system and nothing comes up. I don't know why. Well, thanks again for being here with us, Afro. We're very excited to have you here and to ask you some questions. So I'll just run through a few questions with you and you can share some of your experiences. And then I have some interesting facts that I've dug up about Saudi Arabia that I want to run by you and see if we can get some additional information on those things.
All right.
Okay. Cool. So first, Afro, can you tell us about your hometown, about where you're from?
Yeah, I'm from Saudi, from a town that is called Afif. It's right in the middle of Saudi. I would say it's 4 times bigger than St. George, mm-hmm. with a population of around 800,000 people.
Nice. And what kind of climate is it there in your hometown?
During the summer, a piece of hell. It's really hot. And it's really cold during the winter.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Dry
winter.
Okay. So you do have pretty distinct seasons there.
Yeah.
Okay. I didn't realize that about Saudi. I just figured it was like, it was hot all year round.
No, it's like, we have like winter and summer, but they both are really hard to like adjust your body to it.
Okay. And how does your city compare to a bigger city like Riyadh?
Oh,
in terms of size,
it's really like comparing to Riyadh, it's really small. Because
mm-hmm.
Riyadh is way, way bigger.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to like, go like from the east to the south, it might like take 3-4 hours.
Mm-hmm.
It's like to drive all the way.
And you said that your hometown is in the center of Saudi?
Yeah, like kind of in the center.
Okay, and can you give us an idea of where Riyadh is?
Yeah, well, Riyadh is kind of. From the center, I would say it's a little bit northeast
mm-hmm.
from my town.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
Okay. Great. Afif?
Afif. A-F-I-F.
A-F-I-F. Afif. Yeah. Okay. Cool. What do you miss most about Afif, about your hometown?
Well, I miss a lot of things. I miss my family, of course. My brother, since he's really growing up right now, and I'm kind of like far away from him.
Is he younger?
Yeah, he's younger than me.
How old is he?
14.
14. Yeah.
But when I moved here to the US first, he was like 8 or 9, I think.
Mm-hmm. So you've been away from your family for a long time, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. You have any other siblings?
Yeah, I have like 5 sisters.
5 sisters. Wow. That's a big family.
Yeah.
Is that pretty typical in Saudi to have a lot of siblings?
It's really typical.
Mm-hmm. What else do you miss about your hometown? So your family.
Friends, siblings, you know, hanging out with my old school friends, like high school friends, middle school friends.
Mm-hmm. Do you miss the food?
Oh, yeah.
I always hear the 3 Fs from students about what they miss most. It's always family, friends, and food.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, especially in Cedar City, like, there's no
Yeah, there is
no
Arabic restaurants.
Right.
Well, there is like a just like a little small, and it's combined like Indian and kind of Arabic food, but it's not like you have to cook it.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Yeah, like it's not a restaurant, right?
Yeah.
It's like a there's
yeah,
a market.
Just a market.
Yeah. So do you do most of your own cooking?
Yeah, I cook.
I ask you that. I already knew the answer to that question. That was really for the listeners because I've been to your house
yeah.
and you cooked me an amazing dish. Can you describe what the typical
yeah,
food
so
from Saudi
the typical dish that we have back home, well, it's kind of like dishes, but the most likely I would say it's kabsa. So it consists of rice and meat, and it's up to you like what kind of meat, cow, sheep, chicken, or camel.
Mm-hmm. Or camel.
Yeah.
Okay, I have a question about camel. We're gonna come back to this later, but that is something that you is the traditional food in
yeah.
in Saudi.
Yeah.
Cool. So okay, so kabsa can be any of those meats.
Yep.
With rice, with you have vegetables cooked in.
Yeah. Well, like it depends on the cooker. If you want, like for me, I usually don't cook that much of vegetables.
Mm-hmm. You just like the good stuff,
the carbs,
straight to the meat and
protein,
rice.
Protein, chicken, and the carbs, which
sure.
is rice.
Yeah, just carve it up. Sure. How do you eat? What's sort of the food culture in
yeah,
Saudi?
Yeah, so we eat on the ground. We sit, you know, with the whole family in one dish, and we share it.
Yeah, and you...
And we eat with our hands.
That's what I was going to get
at. It's the most comfortable way to
yeah.
eat.
So when you first came to the States, were you was it uncomfortable for you to try to eat with
well, no,
utensils?
Well, no, I have eaten with like the spoon and forks, knives, but like the comfortable way, it's with my hand
mm-hmm.
always.
Yeah,
yeah.
That's something that I really love about Saudi food culture is first that you share a big dish.
Yeah.
Like, I think in America, we're so individualistic in a lot of
yeah.
ways, but especially when it comes to food, right? And oftentimes, we're so concerned about, like, eating quickly and getting to our next thing that we have to do.
Yeah.
And I've eaten with a few Saudi students before I came to your house, so I knew about eating on the floor and eating with your hands, and I think it's such a communal event.
How was it for you?
It was amazing.
Nice.
Really, I'm not just saying that because you're here.
Okay.
It was incredible. It was the food was amazing. I really like eating with my hands too. There's a few other times I've done that.
It's more tasty, huh?
It is. And there's something really about like literally being in touch with your food
yeah.
that makes it like a more tangible experience. And I think you're like using different senses and
yeah.
it's fun too. I just like to eat with my hands. It makes me feel like a kid again, like when my parents aren't looking. Ethiopian food also, they
yeah.
usually eat with their hands. A lot of Indian food as well.
Yeah, Indians as well. I would say like most of the Middle Eastern countries, they eat with their hands,
mm-hmm.
the traditional way. But in terms of fancy, they might use like, you know, dishes, like individual dishes and spoons.
Mm-hmm. Are there any rules I need to be aware of if I'm eating with my hands?
Not really.
Do I have to eat with my right hand?
Yeah.
Because I've heard that that's a...
Yeah, well, it's like...
I don't know if it's a rule, but it's a general guideline,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, even if I'm left-handed?
You'll have to try with your right hand.
Okay, you got to get ambidextrous.
Yeah.
Okay. Any other typical foods that you think listeners should be aware of?
I would say edam. It's kind of like soup with vegetables, and it depends if you want to add meat to it or no, but it's really delicious too.
Edam?
Yeah, it's called edam.
Edam. Okay. Good. You're making me very hungry. I wish we had a Mediterranean Arabic restaurant here in town. I'll have to cook my own. So when did you come here to the United States?
It was 19th of September. It's the
wow.
first day I put my foot on the U.S.
You
like
remember
US
the day?
Around. Yeah, it will be not forgotten at all.
Why is it so memorable?
So it's really a long story. So I graduated from high school at the year of 2011. And then during the summer vacation, it was Ramadan actually. So one day my dad invited his friends who used to study in the U.S. and at that time they were studying at Hungary.
Then, in the country, Hungary.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, and then they were like talking, and you know, like I was there, like as guest, I have to serve them with like the coffee, like the Arabic coffee or like the tea, or whatever they want. And then they were like talking about studying abroad, and I was like kind of into this conversation. I was like trying to figure out who they are trying to send.
Mm-hmm.
And then at the moment where my dad asked his friend like for a way to contact the university that he's studying in Hungary, and then when my dad took the number, I was like really curious. I was like, there's something wrong is going on right now. Mm-hmm. I have like to figure it out. So I went to grab the tea from the kitchen, and I went to my mom. I was like, do you have any idea what's going on? And she was like, well, your dad is sending you to study abroad. And at that time, when I finished my high school, I was trying to apply for any university in the country of Saudi. And King Fahad for the petroleum and the, I don't know what is it called in English, but it's like kind of like petroleum university.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like the farthest university that I was applying for. And I was like curious how I will get back to my home like during the weekend. And I was like telling my family, including like my sisters and mom, actually, I was like, this is far away from you guys. And then
that was a university in Saudi.
In Saudi.
Okay.
And
then you find out your dad wants to send you to Hungary.
Yeah. And then it did not happen actually, due to I think it was like in the middle of the school year, so I have to wait for a period of time to apply for the college.
Mm-hmm.
Afterwards, they decided, without even like asking my opinion about it, to send me to the U.S.
That's a big shift.
Yeah. And
was that a relief for you, or how did you feel about the idea of instead going to the United States?
I was so scared. Like I really was so scared.
Uh-huh.
And then afterwards, my dad's friend, like they left, and I started like talking with him. I was like, are you being serious right now, or like joking with me? And I was like, no, I'm dead serious. I was like, at least like ask me.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, no, I know what's good for you. I was like, I know, like you are my dad, and I will never like reject whatever you want like to tell me, but at least ask me about how I feel about this.
Mm-hmm.
2 days later, he was like, get prepared. We are like traveling to the capital city, which is Riyadh.
2 days?
2 days later.
After this idea was first planted in your head.
We went to the immigration center like to get my passport, and then we went to this international office. It's called My Future.
Mm-hmm.
I applied through here, like through them, to get at SEU, and then like they were like, honestly, I don't remember most of the stories at that period of time because I was so scared of like getting like abroad.
Mm-hmm.
And then we gave them like the requirements paper for like the applications, like to get the I-20 and everything to get my visa.
Mm-hmm.
And then a week later, we received an email. I got accepted at SEU. We went back to Riyadh, and then went to the US embassy to my interview to get my visa.
Mm-hmm.
And once I left the embassy, I was really praying that they reject me, honestly, because I had no other choice, because
uh-huh.
I was coming here, no way. And then 48 hours later, the FedEx, like kind of the post office,
mm-hmm.
they called my number, and they were like, "We received something for you. Come get it." So I went there. It was my password. I was trying to open it so slowly to not, you
just
know,
hoping there wasn't actually in there.
And then it was on the first page, like the second page. I saw my visa, and I was like, "Well, it's happening."
You were probably one of the most disappointed people to ever have received a United States visa.
Yeah.
So how long until you came to the US then? Was it?
It was like a month.
Yeah.
Well, in total of 2 months.
Mm-hmm.
Since the idea came to my dad's brain until like I left Saudi.
Wow, that's pretty quick.
Yeah, it was really quick.
So what were your thoughts when you first got here?
So honestly, like from what I see, like at the movies, social media, I was expecting to get kidnapped from any gangsters. Unfortunately, it did not happen. Yeah, I flew from Jeddah, Saudi Arabia, mm-hmm. all the way to DC. And at that time, I flew at 7 a.m. in the morning back home. And the arriving time was like 2 p.m., so afternoon. Mm-hmm. And I was like, wow, this is really close. And I ended up like traveling 12 hours at the noon, like during the noon time. Mm-hmm. And it was really interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. So your first stop was DC.
Yeah, DC.
And then did you come straight here to Utah?
Yeah, from DC to Salt Lake City. Uh-huh. And then I stayed there for one night and then came to Cedar the day after.
Okay, first impressions of Cedar City. Be honest.
Honestly, I was expecting to see like really tall buildings, like the lifestyle is really like crowded, people walking on the street. And when I saw Cedar, I was like, this is probably just stop. Then I will like just move to where I'm.
You'll go to actually, your real
yeah.
home? Yeah.
And then I realized there was Cedar City.
Yeah. This is home.
Yeah.
But how does it feel now? You've been here how long? 6 years?
Almost 6 years.
Almost
yeah.
6 years.
Yeah.
Do you feel like Cedar City has become,
yeah.
in a sense, home?
Yeah. Yeah.
What do you like most about Cedar?
The rain season, the spring season, actually. Mm-hmm. I really love it. You know, like back home, we don't get pretty often like the season rains. It happens, but not really like long times. And then when it rains in here, it's my favorite time. Mm-hmm. You might like see me walking on the streets.
In the rain?
Yeah.
With your hair just...
Yeah.
I'll be on the lookout. I really love springtime.
Yeah, it's
well.
My favorite.
Yeah, especially because then winter's over.
Yeah.
What do you think the most difficult thing about transitioning to life here was?
Yeah, well, for me, the most difficult thing was communicating with people. I came with yes, no, and bathroom, probably.
That's all the English you spoke when you
yeah,
came?
Yeah, I used my magical language, which was the sign language.
Uh-huh.
So whenever I want anything, I just like use my hands and try to describe my best tense in like a sign language.
Yeah.
Yeah, or use Google, which was horrible.
Yeah, yeah. That Google helps with certain scenarios, but...
Well, like with vocabulary, I would say, but right. not with like a whole sentence.
No. You ask someone to speak into Google Translate and
yeah.
then you translate it and you realize it's total nonsense. That's impressive. So you did the ESL program here.
Yeah.
And then you've graduated and
yeah,
gone on
joined
to...
Yeah, joined SEU as
that's
academic
pretty,
student.
That's some pretty serious progress you've made.
Yeah.
That's a shout out to our ESL program here.
Yeah.
Good work, right? So the language was tough, right?
Yeah.
What did you notice a difference in the way people communicate in a cultural sense? Like, was it just the language or was it also a level of openness or...
Yeah, like, you know, as a Muslim, I don't like get in touch with like women
mm-hmm.
at all.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we can talk to them, but we don't like shake their hands or like hug them
mm-hmm.
as the way they do it in here. It was really like kind of new thing to me,
mm-hmm.
but I got into it.
Sure.
I fit in the culture.
Yeah, because a lot of communication is a cultural. There's a cultural component to it,
yeah.
right? And a lot of things that maybe as Americans we don't think about.
Yeah.
But if you're coming from Saudi, like even something as like as casual as us hugging our friend as a girl,
yeah.
to you when you first arrive might be shocking or
yeah,
surprising.
It was really shocking.
Right. So do you feel like when you go, you've been back to Saudi, right?
Yeah.
Do you feel like when you go back, do you ever...
It's totally different.
You feel like reverse culture shock or do you feel like...
Well, it probably, I would say it takes me one day to just like adjust my normal habits as Saudi.
You have to shift back into,
yeah.
into Saudi mode. Yeah.
yeah.
But that's also, that's an aspect of being bicultural
yeah.
in a sense, is you can operate as as Afro in America.
Yeah.
And then you got Afro in Saudi, right?
Well, there's no Afro in Saudi.
There's no Afro.
I have to hide it from my dad.
Do you?
Yeah.
So you're Ahmed.
Yeah.
In Saudi.
Real Ahmed.
So I have. Does any of your family? No one calls you Afro, right? From your family. That's
well,
just
like,
an American thing.
My sisters start calling me Afro.
They call you that?
Yeah.
That's funny. How about? Do your teachers here call you Afro?
Yeah.
Okay. So that's pretty much like that's like your
well,
common
not,
name. Here.
Not most of them, but they're my major professor.
Uh huh.
He used to call me Afro Dilly.
Afro Dilly?
So yeah, he took my kind of like my last name and combined it with Afro, so it's Afro Dilly.
I like that.
Yeah.
It's got a good ring to it. I might start using that. What is one thing you wish people knew about Saudi Arabia? Or about Saudi people?
That's a really good question.
Or more than one thing. You don't have to limit yourself.
Yeah, I know, like, regardless of what people see, like, in the media, I really don't know how to like respond to this question, but
mm-hmm.
if they would have come to Saudi and you know see the lifestyle there, they might just like forget about anything they have listened or read or like see on the news.
And I would agree with you in this sentiment that the media misconstrues
yeah.
or misportrays people from the Middle East in general, right? So suggesting that people go see it for themselves
and see it yeah
one thing I haven't been to Saudi, but I've been to Turkey and I've been to Indonesia, are two Muslim majority countries, the two I've been to. And what I noticed was an overwhelming sense of hospitality.
Yeah,
like people were, those are two of the places where people have been the most welcoming across the board. Like everybody would like, they like wave at me in the streets and invite me into their homes and serve me food. And
yeah, this is like the traditional way actually in most of the Middle Eastern countries.
Mm-hmm.
Is the hospitality, it's the most important thing. Like it's the way we like we kind of like show our guest respect. It doesn't have to be a guest, but it might
mm-hmm.
be friends, you know, siblings.
Mm-hmm.
So hospitality is the first thing always.
Mm-hmm. Good. So listeners out there, Afro saying, come to Saudi, right?
Yeah.
They got a place to stay, maybe?
Yeah.
Maybe
absolutely.
Not everyone at once. What surprised you most about life in the United States? Is there anything that you've learned over the years you've been here that...
Yeah, honestly, like, I learn a few things, or at least I think every single day. If it's, like, so obvious or it's not obvious, but I learn a lot. In terms of culture, in terms of like how to communicate with people, in terms of like how to deal like with your like own problems.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of like a thing that I like, you know, it's getting into that thing.
Sure, it's a constant learning
yeah.
experience, right? You've traveled quite a bit around the United States
yeah.
too, right? You're wearing a San Diego hat, so I know you've
my
been...
My favorite city.
Yeah. Yeah, San Diego's pretty awesome. What other places have you visited?
I went to San Francisco, Los Angeles. I went to Washington, D.C.,
mm-hmm.
Salt Lake City. This is pretty much it.
Do you notice a difference even in those places compared to Utah?
I don't really see it that much, but if I would stay there for a long time, I might see like a difference, and you know, I could tell which is which.
Mm-hmm. Do you think within Saudi there are like distinct cultures, like for
yeah.
example in the West or in the
yeah.
East?
Yeah.
How would you describe some of the like some general ideas of different
so
Saudi cultures?
Pretty much they have one thing in common, which is the greatest hospitality. But like if you go to the north part of Saudi, and let's say I'm from the north side and you come to me, I don't serve you the Arabic coffee unless you get one of these dates, like the you know the dates, right?
Dates, yeah.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Cuz I visited a friend of mine, that was a long time ago, and he did not give me my coffee. I was like, what is he thinking about? Like, I need to drink coffee. And he like finally he noticed, he was like, get one day so I can like serve you the coffee.
So you have to eat the date before you get coffee.
Yeah, well, this is like the northern culture.
Okay.
Yeah, but in the middle, like in the most of the middle cities, like it doesn't really matter. Like,
yeah.
You just get your coffee first, or like you get your date first.
That's funny. Do they have different dialects? Like, can you tell just from hearing the way someone speaks where they're from?
Yeah.
I think that's similar in most countries, right? It seems like, obviously in America, we have different accents.
Yeah.
And I've noticed that students have said the same thing about their home countries.
Yeah.
I have a funny story about dates. So I was teaching at my last school in Denver, and I had a student from Saudi, and he came up to me after class one day. I was standing out in the hallway, and he said, "John, do you like dates?" And for about 15 seconds, I didn't realize he was talking about the food dates. I thought he was asking me if I... I didn't really know how to respond. So I just stood there in silence trying to figure out how to respond. And then I realized it clicked. And I was like, oh, yeah. I love dates. And then he brought me 3 packages of the best Saudi dates I've ever had.
Yeah.
I think he wanted a grade improvement. It didn't.
Probably.
It didn't boost his grade at all. But
it was kind of like under table way to just get grade.
It was a solid attempt.
Yeah.
You know, it was delicious. Whatever it was.
Yeah, I really love them. Especially when you with the Arabic coffee, that's really delicious.
It's a good combination.
Yeah.
Good. Speaking of Arabic coffee, can you kind of describe to the listeners what the difference between? It's not like American coffee.
It's way different.
Totally different.
Really strong.
So what's the difference? How could you describe
it? So like the taste of it is really different. So we don't add sugar on it. And we add some spices. I don't have the name of them right now. But yeah, we mix them with saffron.
Mm-hmm.
Like just a tiny bit of saffron. Just like to make the color more like official gold.
Mm-hmm. So it's got like a golden look to it.
Yeah, and it's really tasty.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's for anyone that hasn't tried Arabic coffee. When you first taste Arabic coffee, it does not taste like what you would imagine.
Even the smell, like you can tell.
Yeah, it smells like I think cardamom is
the
herb. It to me it tastes like a very intense tea, like with a lot of different herbs and flavors and spices, but it's delicious. The other thing I've noticed is that when you drink all your coffee, you put it down.
Well, before you put it down, the person who's like serving the coffee, he must like serve you before you landed your like
before you even touch the table.
It's not necessarily, but once he sees it, like for me, if I see it like it's empty or like the way you drink it, it's kind of empty. I just like, just give it to me. I will like serve you more.
I say this from experience because when I was at Afro's house, it was like a constant stream of coffee and I subconsciously drink stuff sometimes. And so I was so hyper caffeinated. Like I probably had 15 little cups of this really strong Arabic coffee, but it's delicious. I recommend anyone who hasn't tried it to give it a shot.
Yeah.
We have events on campus sometimes where we serve Arabic coffee.
Yeah.
So make sure to keep in touch with what we're doing and get a chance to have some of that. I gotta ask you about camels, man.
Oh, man.
I've heard that you're the person to ask about, I guess your family raises camels?
Yeah.
Okay,
well, it's my family, yeah. Officially, it's my family, but not my dad. His uncle.
Okay.
Which is my grandfather's uncle.
So he has how many camels?
Around, I would say 80, if not 100.
80 to 100 camels.
Yeah.
So what do you raise camels for?
Well, this is like something that like all tribes in Saudi like kept doing since day one, because we get milk from it,
mm-hmm.
we get meat from it,
mm-hmm.
we like produce silk from it,
mm-hmm.
so kind of kind of like business.
Sure.
Yeah.
So how, I don't think many people in the United States have tasted camel's milk. I know I haven't. Is it similar to cow's milk?
Nope.
Is it better?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah.
What is it? Is it, what's the taste like?
It's really, it's really sweet.
Okay.
Once like you milk the camel and just drink it right after, it's like kind of warm and sweet, which is really good.
That's good.
And we eat like dates with it too, like with the camel meat. It's the best combination.
Okay.
Yeah.
Good. That's
all people use it back home, as they like have been telling us these kind of like stories. It's kind of, oh, this is like good for your body. It keeps you like strong. It keeps you, you know, and which is, it really does.
Do you miss it?
Yeah, absolutely.
You haven't been able to find it at Lim's or Smith's? No Walmart,
yeah.
Camel's milk? Not yet. We'll work on an import
okay.
business. I want to try it. It sounds interesting. Lastly, before we get to some of the Saudi facts I want to run by you, I want to ask you about sort of your general thoughts on the current situation in the country. As a Muslim,
mm-hmm.
right? And as someone that's studying here on a visa, without getting too political, how has the current climate sort of affected you? Has it bothered you?
Well, like what I see like in the media and what I read, it's kind of really like something not satisfying us as Muslims,
mm-hmm.
since we have been banded like some countries. I mean, I know it's not my business, but this is my opinion about it. Since I'm Cedar, I don't really need to be worried about it.
Mm-hmm.
But if I would be living in like a big city rather than Cedar, I might be really like even nervous about it.
Mm-hmm.
But
do you think that's because in some of those cities there's a lot more demonstrations
yeah.
and protests?
Yeah.
Yeah. I think you touch on something interesting, and that's the bubble we live in a small town.
Yeah.
In Utah, I think. A lot of what we're hearing is from the media, and it seems far away.
Yeah.
And that's sometimes can be easy to fall into and not and think about it. Like
yeah,
that's it's
that.
Really far from here, right?
Yeah.
I think as someone that works in international education, I think I speak for a lot of people in expressing that we're concerned about the trend. Because I think our job is to try to educate people and let people know that like a more inclusive, a more
yeah.
diverse, a more accepting community and campus is
yeah.
one that everyone can benefit from. I think for a lot of people it's scary at first.
Yeah.
Especially like if they're watching TV all the time, right?
Yeah.
Like news has that effect on people.
Yeah.
You know, but and that's why we try to have events where people can say, hey, if I've never met a Muslim, come meet my friend Afro.
Yeah.
Okay? And then they get a chance to really interact with someone on a one-on-one level.
Exactly.
So anyway, that's my
European.
My take on it. Do you have any other additional thoughts before we get to some interesting Saudi facts?
Let's get into it.
All right, let's dive on in. So, I pulled up an article, 70 interesting facts about Saudi Arabia. I'm not going to read all 70.
Okay.
We could be here for hours.
Okay.
But I picked out five that I think are kind of interesting. So, first one, as you know, the Burj Khalifa is the tallest tower in the world currently,
yeah.
right? But not for long. The Saudi Arabia's Kingdom Tower started... construction began in 2014. It will be the tallest tower in the world.
Yep.
Did
and
you know
located,
this?
Yeah. It's located in the west coast of Saudi in the city of Jeddah.
Jeddah?
Yeah.
Okay. When do you know when it'll be finished?
I really have no idea.
Not sure. Because it said 2014, so they've been working on it for about
yeah.
3 years now. I'm looking forward to seeing it. It's going to be 600 feet taller than the Burj Khalifa.
Yeah.
It's impressive.
Really tall.
Yeah. The next... fact I thought was interesting. Saudi Arabia is the largest country in the world without a river.
Yeah.
That I couldn't believe that. There's no permanent body of water.
Well, we have non-active rivers. But once it rains and like too much rain, they will like become active for like a certain time, and then they will like dry.
But there's no river that is consistently full of water.
No.
I think as Americans too, like we just take that for granted. Like we have lakes and rivers and ponds everywhere, right?
Yeah.
I thought, I mean, it makes sense because Saudi Arabia is 95% desert.
Yeah.
But I think we just, we're, it's hard for me to imagine, but I haven't been there, so maybe I need to go.
Yeah.
Is it true that they're called Wadi? The dry?
Wadi.
It's a
Wadi, yeah.
Is the dry river, but
yeah.
I'm working on my Arabic. next one. Riyadh's camel market is one of the largest in the world and sells about 100 camels per day. So there's a camel market in Riyadh.
Yeah, we have like several camels auctions, not actually like one, and it's during the winter most likely, because you know like no one would go to the desert at noon during the summer season because it's really really hot. You can get burned, and they have like auctions where everyone like who wants to sell like his camel just like show up, and there is like a group of judge, I mean judges, they like tell the price if you want to sell it by this, or and they just like start their auctions on.
So it's just like we have livestock auctions here for cattle and for horses and sheep, for camels, right? This brings us to our next camel fact. Baby camel is one of the most tender of Saudi meats.
Yeah,
it's a specialty of Jeddah, and help me with this one.
Jezaz?
Is that a city in Saudi?
No.
Okay. It's a specialty in Jeddah, at least.
Like the, you meant the meat? Well, it's everywhere.
Baby camel?
Yeah. You can go like to the meat store and just like, hey, give me a camel meat. Like 2 pounds, 3 pounds, it depends on how many you want.
How can you describe the taste? Like, is it similar to beef?
Yeah, it's really like, really, really similar to beef, but it's more like, I would say healthy, kind of dry, non-oil.
So it's less fatty?
Yeah, and it's not like really dark when you cook it. So it's kind of like really, shows as like a brown, kind of like burnt brown when you cook it.
And is baby camel like more expensive, more sought after than
older? Like in terms of meat, yes. Because no one like would like to eat the old camels.
Yeah.
It's similar, really like,
similar to like lamb, for example. We tend to eat the younger animals. It's more tender.
Yeah.
Sorry for all the animal rights activists out there.
No, it's all good.
I'm interested. I would like to try it. At some point.
Find me one and I will cook it for you.
Okay.
How about this?
I'll see if I can find any camels out around in Cedar City. If I find one, I might be kind of concerned.
Hump, remember, not two.
One hump.
Yeah.
Because one hump is a camel, two humps.
It's
a different.
What is it called?
We call them dromedaries. I don't know what you'd say.
I really don't know what they even call it in Arabic.
I don't know how I remember that. That was from like third grade. I learned that. I'm impressed. Last fact here. It says motorists in Saudi Arabia have invented a perilous but exciting new driving sport called sidewalk skiing, which involves balancing a car on its side while it's in motion. So
yeah,
like on two wheels.
This is kind of like a dangerous hobby that most of the young people back home do it, like young guys. And it's really intense. If you see it in reality, it's really fun to watch. We have kind of like events, like summer activities or like winter activities or like spring activities. We add them as like main activity, like to like let people watch and you know cheer the driver up.
So this is like a would it be on television? Like is
So
it's a competition.
Yeah.
Sidewalk skiing.
Sidewalk skiing?
That's what it's called here, but is that...
Yeah, well, like, you meant, like, driving a car on two wheels only. Yeah.
Yeah. Have you ever done it?
Nah.
No?
But, like, I know, like, some friends who can, like, take me on, like, two wheels. cruising on town.
There's no concern about flipping the car over or?
Like on the street, you will get a ticket. The police will like follow you until they stop you.
Yeah, makes
but
sense.
If you are like out of the town and nobody is like around you, but you, first of all, like you need to make sure you are not interrupting like the road, so like no accident will happen.
Mm-hmm.
And if not, it's like, let's go for it.
I feel like I've seen that on YouTube. I might have to look it up.
Yeah,
again.
Well, yeah, you can see tons of movie like videos on YouTube.
If you guys want to check it out, type in sidewalk skiing Saudi. I think you'll probably get some hits on that one. Awesome, Afra. Thanks for joining us today.
You.
It
Thank
was
you.
Very interesting. Thanks for teaching us so much about Saudi.
Yeah, of course.
And introducing us to your story here.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. Once again, listeners, thank you for joining us. This was episode 2 of International Voices. We have a Facebook group now that we're trying to invite people to join. It is called International Voices. The URL is facebook.com/intlvoicespodcast. And please stay tuned and give us any suggestions you have for future episodes. We will be bringing you more great international students with some excellent stories and tips for you in the future. So thanks again for listening, and we'll talk to you soon.